Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast. On this Wednesday, September 11th, 2019, thank you so much for joining me, and we're going to be getting to the SmackDown Live review, as well as the Clash of Champions predictions with my co-host Anthony DeMarco, doing this a day early. Tomorrow, I may or may not be having a show. I'm totally frank. I'm selling my house, so I got a lot of logistical things to get done before that happens. So I may or may not have a show, but I'll be back Sunday at the very latest for your wrestling nostalgia and get the whole thing rolling again, and obviously get into Clash of Champions and the review of that show. So I'll keep you guys updated if you follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast. But first, I just want to thank you guys for listening, and you can catch me every single week, four times a week, right here on Apple Podcasts, on Spreaker, anywhere that you find podcasts, and also on TuneIn, and iHeartRadio and several other shows and places. It's just everywhere. So check it out if you want to. And also, if you want an ad-free experience, head on over to Patreon. I know I say that every time, but I get a lot of people, you know, the feedback saying, I like your show, but there's too many ads. Well, I have a solution. You just head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast. You can get an ad-free experience over there. And I would love it if you check it out, because I'm going to be adding video very soon. The goal is by next week, I'm going to be adding video exclusively to Patreon, and it will not be available anywhere else except for patreon.com/WWE podcast. So you'll get a live or pre-recorded version of this show and just random tidbits of video that I'd like to add there anytime I have an opinion about something. It may not be a full-fledged show. It could just be random thoughts that come to mind that I upload there. So you'll get to get to see me talk to you guys there via video. So that's a little bit of an incentive to check out patreon.com/WWE podcast. Get yourself there now, and you can get an ad-free experience for $1 a month. $1 a month gets you the entire WWE podcast library ad-free. So definitely give that a look. I think you'll enjoy it. All right, well, we're going to get into my conversation with Anthony DeMarco and our conversation about Clash of Champions. Of course, going off topic several times, but we do give our full predictions for the show, and I think you'll enjoy that. But first, I just have a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back. And immediately following this break will be the conversation with Anthony. So, guys, as always, I'll talk to you soon. Hey, so you guys love podcasts. You're listening to one right now. I've got a really good one for you. It's actually hilarious. It's called Shoot from the Hip. There are three co-hosts. It's Matt, Lancer, and Brian. They talk about ridiculous things like why knees aren't just called leg knuckles, some conspiracy theories, dealing with embarrassment, back to school. There are so many different topics that really are just crazy but are really entertaining. And actually, they have 5 stars right now on Apple Podcasts. So I would really recommend that you check them out. They're absurd but hilarious topics. And new episodes drop every single week at sfthpodcast.com. And you can kind of tell, this is going to be one of those shows that shoots quickly up the rankings. So get on board now. Check out Shoot from the Hip podcast. You can find them seriously anywhere, right? Like, just go to iHeartRadio, Google Music, Stitcher, SoundCloud. They're also on all the social media platforms. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and their website, which is sfthpodcast.com. And on Twitter, you can check them out at hipshotpodcast.com. Also on YouTube at Shoot From the Hip podcast. So check them out today, guys. I really think that you'll enjoy the show and get a kick out of it. I listened to one of their shows just before this recording of my podcast, and I'm telling you right now, I was laughing out loud. Some of the stuff that they talk about is, it's so off the wall, but it's so well done and genuinely funny. So check out Shoot From the Hip podcast. You'll be glad you did. All right, Clash of Champions is coming up this Sunday, and it's Wednesday, but that means it's time for a guest. Normally, I do it on Thursday. I had to move it up a day, and I'm glad that Anthony DeMarco could join me. It's always great to have him back on the show. Anthony, welcome back for a big Clash of Champions week.
Glad to be back, Matt. Really excited to get into it tonight.
It's going to be fun because, obviously, Clash of Champions is coming up. We got our predictions that we're going to give shortly. But first, I would like to ask you about some of the big ticket items that happened this week. With Stone Cold in his return to Madison Square Garden, Undertaker in his return to Madison Square Garden, the Stunner and AJ, and Bray Wyatt's hint about 11/19, which I think you know where we're going with that. So just kind of give me your general thoughts about this week in WWE.
Well, you know, like the Stone Cold Steve Austin return, I was looking really forward to it. I gotta say, I was a bit disappointed with how they executed his return. I'm used to, you know, the beer bashing, take no bullshit from anyone, Stone Cold Steve Austin, like friend of nobody, this and that. So it was a bit weird seeing him, you know, like rejoice with, you know, the Viking Raiders and Cedric Alexander and Braun and Seth. But I mean, for strict nostalgia purposes, I suppose I still got my kick. For the most part, I did like Raw, though. I like where they're going with the Seth and Braun feud, and I like that they're incorporating a bunch of wrestlers together. I feel like that's been lacking a lot in WWE as of late, like interlocking storylines, having AJ Styles and the OC and Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler in the thick of things. So I've been really looking forward every week to seeing how they mesh all these different storylines together. And then moving over to SmackDown, The Undertaker, you know, that return, I think it was exactly what we expected. Again, Sami Zayn's interaction with him, again, I've just kind of come to terms with the fact that Sami Zayn is pretty much a jobber, but a funny one at that. I always enjoy it. So seeing his interaction with The Undertaker was pretty cool. The rest of SmackDown, you know, I felt it left something a little to be desired. I feel like the Randy Orton, Kofi Kingston angle is kind of getting a bit repetitive here. Well, as we both have agreed, we're both kind of fed up with Kofi Kingston as a whole. And I'm really intrigued to where they're going with the Shane and Kevin Owens angle. I was pretty fed up with the angle going into SmackDown, but now with KO allegedly being fired, I'm kind of hooked now to see where they advance with this. So although SmackDown wasn't as good as Raw, I felt like it was a pretty good week all in all.
It was, and if you were in the New York City area, you got a hell of a lot of wrestling over the last couple of days and legends that you very rarely get to see. And as you mentioned, yeah, the Stone Cold return, it was what I was kind of hoping it was in terms of a stunner and we got beer. But now that you pointed out, I don't need Stone Cold to be friends with everybody. At the same time, Stone Cold is no longer an active competitor. The active competitor, Stone Cold Steve Austin, would have never ever done that and would have dropped about six people on their neck. But I understand why he's doing it. I'm okay with it from the perspective of understanding that it's Stone Cold, but it's not the Stone Cold of 1999. So I'm okay with it from that perspective. Anytime I get to see him, it's just brings me back to like I'm 15 years old again. Undertaker, yeah, I was fine with his return. It seemed a little bit flatter than Stone Cold's. You know, had Sami Zayn not interrupted, what would have been his purpose for being there, right? Maybe saying that it's time for a new generation of wrestlers to take their foothold. I don't know. I mean, so he gave Sami a choke slam. As you said, Sami Zayn is hilarious as a heel. I have begrudgingly defined him down, as you said, kind of to a jobbing role, and it's really unfortunate. And I think we feel about the same in terms of, you know, underutilizing Sami Zayn, but he is what he is at this point, and I will take him for what he's worth, and that's a extremely entertaining, obnoxious, love to see him get his ass kicked kind of heel, and that's always a pleasure for me too.
Yeah, and I think that if Sammy can't make it as an upper echelon wrestler, I would rather him be on TV as a heel jobber. Even if he can't win a match, and if he's just a mouthpiece for Shinsuke Nakamura or to get chokeslammed by the Undertaker or what have you, I still enjoy seeing Sami Zayn. And if this is his niche on the main roster, then I'm okay with it. You know, I think sometimes, even though we like wrestlers, we have to take a step back and realize that not all of them can become world champions or even intercontinental and U.S. champions. You know, Sami Zayn still hasn't won a belt on the main roster. But either way, if this is what he has to do and this is the role he has to portray to be on television night in, night out, I'm okay with it. And like you said, he's hilarious. He's one of the funniest characters on the roster. And I'm here all day for Sami Zayn.
And his entrance music. I love his entrance music. I mean, yes, I typically enjoy when heels turn or when babyfaces turn heel that they should adjust their music in some kind of way, i.e. Bayley, whatever the hell she's doing, we'll get to her. But just to touch quickly on Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens, yeah, this week got me a little more interested than I have been in the past few weeks, with Kevin Owens essentially being neutered and just cowering to the $100,000 that Shane McMahon implemented on him and begging him figuratively to take it away, and it's going to hurt his family and all this stuff, and then goes around, screws Shane in the first fall, and then decides to help Shane, only to eventually have Shane lose. Shane fires Kevin Owens and assaults him. I think what they're doing here, and I don't think this is really a Clash of Champions prediction, but what they're doing is Kevin Owens, who was the referee and official, Shane assaulted. So I think that they're going to use that as against Shane, where Kevin Owens can say, hey, you assaulted me as an official. You know, I got the board of directors involved. You can't implement this fine on me. What they're going to do is cancel out the fine because Shane also assaulted an official. But the whole firing thing, we all know how firing angles go in WWE. I don't know if there's ever been one in the history of the modern era that has actually stuck.
Yeah, well, I like that you brought up the first fall there where Kevin screwed him over and then Shane just ignored it. I was just like, oh, okay, so this is how the match is going to, you know, explode, and we're going to see where Kevin and Shane go from here. But then Shane restarts it as a best 2-0-3, and then all of a sudden Kevin's back to being subservient to him. It seemed like maybe someone got their wires crossed, and if it was the plan, I think it was maybe just poorly executed. But that's neither here nor there. But yeah, I think it's going to add a new wrinkle to this. Obviously, Kevin Owens isn't gone. I think that's fairly obvious, like you just pointed out. And I am really intrigued to see where it goes, because it is a new angle and, you know, they freshened it up a bit. You know, there's only so many times that Kevin Owens can cower in the face of a fine from Shane McMahon. But right before I forget, because you brought up Bayley, I just wanted to say that tag team match with who I think are the four best women in WWE today, in Bayley, Sasha, Charlotte, and Becky, was absolutely amazing. That was one of the best tag team matches I've seen in a really long time. The storytelling was great. I love the finish. And I really think that it's just setting the stage for a really big pay-per-view for the women's on Sunday night.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just because I don't know what they're doing with Bayley doesn't mean that she can't perform in the ring. I think that she did a very good job, along with the other three women in that match. That was one of the best. And I said this on my show last night, that this could have easily been a pay-per-view quality match. And it was a pay-per-view quality match. Had this been on Sunday, I would have said this is absolutely a passable and very good match. The fact that it was on free TV on Monday Night Raw in Madison Square Garden with that hot crowd made it that much better too. So yeah, hats off to all four that I think eventually, and I think we all kind of believe as the collective we, that it's eventually going to have all four women here make amends and join forces against the four horsewomen with Ronda Rousey and her crew. I think that's really where they're going. I believe that's where we all believe that's where they're going. And that'll be totally cool too. So to have them get all of their anger out against each other here will make it that much more of a moment when they all come together, put their differences aside to, you know, fight off the invaders that are Ronda Rousey and her crew.
Yeah, and, you know, these are the four faces that ushered in this new era, the women's evolution. And, you know, I'm over Becky. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of Bayley, huge fans of Sasha and Charlotte, but no matter which way that you feel about them or how you feel about them, you can't deny that they're pretty much the faces and the cornerstone of the women's division. And if they are, in fact, heading for a 4-on-4 fight with Ronda Rousey and her crew, I'm here all for it, you know? And I think that it really got me excited for their matches, their respective matches this coming Sunday, because I was so disinterested with Becky Lynch that Sasha made me care about her again. And I was so disinterested with the SmackDown women's division as a whole that Bayley's latest turn and character shift got me reinterested. And, you know, whenever Charlotte's in a match, you know it's going to be an A-quality match. So those two matches, I'm thoroughly looking forward to at Night of Champions. But another quick thing, I just wanted to say, did you realize that Rowan got his first name back?
Yes, I did. I saw that. And I am befuddled as to how he got his name back. They just decide, and it's not also, don't forget too, it's not Bobby Roode anymore. It's now Robert Roode. So WWE has this strange fetish with first names that they take away, put back, modify, slice up, dice up, and change. I don't know what WWE's issue is with first names, but yes, Eric Rowan got his name back.
Well, you know, aside from him getting his name back, I really like this new element of his character. Because, you know, I was watching it with my girlfriend actually earlier tonight, and I said, you know, I think that this is the first time I've ever heard Eric Rowan's voice. Like, I don't think I had ever heard him speak before. So it was kind of cool to see him, you know, have his own limelight there, speak his mind. I found he did an excellent promo there, led up to his brawl with Roman Reigns, which I also enjoyed, because even when he was in the Wyatt family, you know, it was always Bray Wyatt center stage, then Luke Harper, if any of the other background Wyatt family members needed a spotlight, it was always Luke Harper. And now Rowan, who was always just the miscast third random child of the family, has been implemented in a very good storyline, at least from my perspective. It's a storyline that obviously we'll get to our predictions later, but I'm really intrigued for. It's a storyline that actually has me kind of invested behind Roman Reigns a bit now that they've gotten past the whole who did it angle and now it's concentrating more on the wrestlers again. But yeah, it's a storyline that I didn't expect to be overly interested in, but I found Rowan's done an excellent job. Obviously, Daniel Bryan's always A-plus quality. And I got to give it to Roman Reigns. Maybe in a reduced role like I've always thought he should be, I've been more intrigued by his character. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to this match on Sunday.
And I will agree with you that Eric Rowan has been the silent one that is almost the invisible one of the Wyatt family, and even the second wheel when it was just the Bludgeon Brothers. I have never heard Eric Rowan speak in any kind of long form dialogue outside of a few words. So hearing him give a promo, I was engaged in his character more than I thought I'd be. I care about his character more than I ever have. That's not saying a whole lot. I may alter his music a bit. When he came out, I'm serious. He had absolutely zero reaction. And maybe that's because the energy was taken out of the building with, you know, it's the end of the show. Undertaker, you know, has zapped the energy from people. You can make a lot of cases, but Eric Rowan got a zero reaction. And I don't know if that's really a sign of things that are to come or if it's just kind of, again, the energy was zapped. But Eric Rowan, I'm willing to give it a chance. The only issue, and it's just a small thing, but kind of big, is he never has provided a motive as to exactly why he's attacked Roman Reigns. He has not given anything other than just, I did it, I'm proud of it, all this, but and turned on Daniel saying, no one can control me. But in any story, you need to explain why that you've done what you've done. There's just no motive, at least to my knowledge.
Yeah, and I think that's what's going to kind of segue into my predictions, so I won't go there yet. But it is an angle that I don't even know if they fully knew where they were going with it when they started. It feels like they kind of threw it together, like, as they went along. Like, I don't know about you, but in that re-enhanced footage, I don't know if they kind of photoshopped Eric Rowan in the hood there. But I just think that they had Daniel Bryan, who was doing a whole lot of nothing. They had Roman Reigns, who was doing a whole lot of nothing. They just kind of threw them together, and they threw shit at the wall and see if it stuck. And this is what they've come up with. I'm just of the belief that maybe given the circumstances, I was really brutish on this storyline at the beginning, and it's intrigued me as it's gone along. But yeah, I think that as of Sunday, we'll finally get what the motive was of Eric Rowan. And I think it's all going to come to a head at Sunday. But in the long-term scheme of things, I think we're far from done with this.
We probably are. And to most people, you know, as much as we may praise Eric Rowan for, or at least WWE giving him a chance for the spotlight for the first time in his career, I think that the casual fan was probably disappointed by the payoff. And essentially, you know, to date, this was the payoff that it's Eric Rowan. He's the guy that did it. And assuming he still is the guy that did it, it's still, to the casual fan, to most casual fans, I believe, it was probably like, oh, it's Eric Rowan. Well, that was a waste of time. I'm probably paraphrasing and speaking for the majority of the casual fans, because even as myself, I'm like, oh, it's got to be Daniel Bryan. And WWE went with Eric Rowan, and my thought is, are they doing this just because most of us thought it was Daniel Bryan, or they're just trying to swerve us? That's not the right motive to use to surprise fans and make it, and you know, make it unpredictable just to make it unpredictable. I still would have made it Daniel Bryan. I think that could have been a hell of a better program than Eric Rowan. At the same time, with the other side of the coin, I am fine with them building new stars, and I'm fine with giving other people an opportunity to shine. So I see both sides.
Well, and I don't want to like go back to what we said in our previous shows that we were on, but one thing about this storyline that has kind of got to me is that the fact that it's taking center stage with the WWE Championship. And I don't want to sound like a broken record here, but man, oh man, like, couldn't they ever try and put this championship on center stage for once? It feels since WrestleMania, since Kofi got it, it's always taking a backseat to personal storylines. And I don't understand why. Like, how is this storyline more important than the WWE Championship? And I feel even the angles that they've done with Kofi and Randy, it's just kind of getting, like, repetitive almost. Like, there was a few weeks where Randy would just ambush Kofi, and it was still the same thing this week, except Kofi got the one up on him. And I don't know, that's the one knock on SmackDown I've found as a whole lately, is that the WWE Championship basically just gets a little 10-15 minute segment before the first hour is up. And then it's usually a brawl, you most times with Kofi on his back, but this time for once with Randy on his back. And I just feel like I don't have a lot of excitement heading into their match on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't either. So we'll jump into Clash of Champions in just a minute, because I don't want to jump the gun, but I definitely have a lot to say about that whole program as well. And Kofi Kingston's just incessant need to always be joking and say baby, and no matter what happens, he comes out, and you know, he's a guy that I'm like, character wise of course, that I feel like if his family died, his entire family died that week, he would still coming out, you know, throwing pancakes down the aisle and doing his shtick in the ring. I mean, like, just nothing seems to change his character, no matter how bad he gets beat up, no matter how bad his friends, his brothers, as he calls them, gets dismantled. And Xavier Woods' leg got taken out 3 weeks ago. None of it. There's just no emotion from Kofi. It's just, I am a robot to the ring. I'm going to throw pancakes, be silly, and placate to the kids in the audience. Like, that really bothers me when that happens. It's just such a disconnect for me. So absolutely, I want to talk about that as well. So now, before we get to Clash of Champions, was there anything else this week that you wanted to touch on?
Well, something just came to my head, because it is called Night of Champions, or Clash of Champions. It used to be called Night of Champions, that every title is defended. Are the SmackDown tag team titles being defended?
Let me look at the card. I don't think they are.
So, and that's kind of something that bothers me a little bit, because the New Day has basically taken a major back seat to Kofi Kingston and have pretty much become irrelevant. And I think that WWE has done a pretty good job at building up, you know, storylines for their upcoming title matches. Like, I've loved the build for the Raw tag team titles. Even though Robert Roode and Dolph Ziggler is kind of a mishmash tag team, I like it. I think AJ Styles has done an excellent job with the U.S. title leading up to this pay-per-view. Obviously, the Universal Championship has been good. The Intercontinental was kind of so-so, but I think that Shinsuke and Sami and Miz have done a decent enough job to build up to it. Obviously, I already talked about the women's titles and how good they've been, but it just bothers me that the New Day, who are the SmackDown Live Tag Team Champions, have been a non-factor in the last 2-3 weeks. Like, I haven't seen Xavier since he got his knee bashed in by the Revival. And Big E, it's been at least 2 or 3 weeks, and I don't even know where they're going with it heading into the pay-per-view.
But, yeah, and as I'm looking at the card, they actually do have a match with the Revival for the SmackDown Tag Team Championship. So they did sneak them onto the card to, you know, the excitement of no one, unfortunately, with zero build other than the fact that the Revival took out the New Day, but has been forgotten about that. So I'm sure that they'll remind the audience with a quick video package before the match, as they should. But boy, you talk about, you know, kind of a go to the concession stand and go to the bathroom break. This unfortunately might be the one. And the Revival here are the ones who are really suffering. The New Day have they've run their course. I've felt they've run their course for a couple of years now. But they're a cash cow for WWE. I understand why they're keeping them. But the Revival, if you look at what they did in NXT, you look at how successful they were, the crowd reactions they got, and they have not been able to duplicate that in WWE main roster. So I think the Revival here are the ones who are suffering more than the New Day, to be honest with you.
Well, and it's like I just said, I feel like there's a real disconnect right now between Raw and SmackDown, and I feel like this is always what happens when they abolish the brand split. Because we've talked about it like when last I was on the show. When Monday Night Raw is really been excellent for the most part. And they've done an excellent job of like making the belts relevant, getting superstars on the show, focusing on the wrestling matches. The builds to all the matches are properly done. Like, all the championships and storylines are interconnecting. I've loved it. But then you go over to SmackDown and you've forgotten about the tag team titles on the New Day. You know, Bayley has made reference to the fact that the SmackDown Live Women's Championship doesn't hold a candle to the Raw Women's Championship. We just talked about how the WWE Championship basically has been forgotten as almost like a mid-card belt. And, you know, somewhat the same for the Intercontinental title, which, although in recent weeks they've made it more relevant, but for the most part has been a non-factor. So that's my only criticism lately. And why I really hope that they do abolish the wild card rule once they send SmackDown to Fox. I've heard that there's supposed to be a new draft coming up around then. But I think it's because you see how well produced Raw is and how brilliant the storylines are. And then you move to SmackDown and it's all kind of a mishmash and all take a backseat to the Raw storylines and titles.
Yeah, there is a huge difference right now between Raw and SmackDown, and I don't know if it's because Eric Bischoff just hasn't found his footing yet. While Paul Heyman has been there for so many years now, consistently day in and day out, it was almost just kind of a shoe-in for him. I mean, it was just kind of like, hey, I know how this place works. I've been around the product. I know what's going on and how to possibly improve things. So, you know, it was kind of a much easier transition, whereas if Eric Bischoff is still trying to find his footing, he admitted that he needed to catch up on the product. There's a lot of lag time for that, and it's not the same as watching it real time. So to reconnect your mind and your soul and your brain into this product and understand what should possibly be done and how to change things and change things the right way and do them in a way that's not too quick, I can see why SmackDown is lagging. And if it's still just Vince McMahon doing the writing, well, I think that and blatantly tearing up scripts, which is reported almost every week that he tears up the script, you know, 10 minutes before the show and rewrites it. So I think that has a lot to do with it, too, of Vince McMahon not letting go of SmackDown because Eric Bischoff may or may not be completely ready to take the helm there.
Well, if that is so the case, it makes sense because it's like almost week to week, you don't really know where the storyline is going. And like I said, a lot of the stories are, and segments are getting repetitive. We mentioned the WWE Championship. And I just feel like, you know, like going back to the well with Kevin and Shane all the time. It's like, when in doubt, go to Kevin and Shane, because for the most part, Shane has good heat and Kevin is very over. And then, you know, you have other, you know, angles where, like, we were talking about the tag team titles. Like, yeah, they snuck those belts onto the card, but the Revival and the New Day haven't come face to face in almost a month. And, like, what, we're supposed to just remember this? Like, no, you have to tell the story. But it does make sense if that is the case, that Bischoff hasn't got his foot and everything settled yet. Because Raw, you know, I'll say it, and I said the last time I was on the show with you, it just seems completely revamped, and it's a good product, and the matches are really well done, and the stories are brilliant. And then you get to the SmackDown, and it's almost worse than when they appointed Eric Bischoff and Paul Heyman as the executive directors.
It does have that feel, and I don't know if it feels worse because Raw is that much better, so the bar is higher, so SmackDown is that much more exposed, and the weaknesses are exposed much more than when it was kind of a level playing field, and Raw and SmackDown just kind of sucked every week in terms of, not all the time, but you would just see the consistent flaws and the inconsistencies in storytelling and just the usual suspects in terms of what we disliked about the shows. And now that Raw has escalated itself, and especially this last week of Monday Night Raw, I, you know, as a whole, like, I really, really enjoyed Monday Night Raw from top to bottom. Not everything, but it was one of the most enjoyable Raws that I have seen in, I don't want to say years, because I don't know if that's exaggerating, but that's what I feel like. It's been quite some time since I've enjoyed a Raw that much, and it was maybe because of the quality of the wrestling. I think that had a lot to do with it. The women's match, the triple threat with Corbin and I want, not Cesaro. I want to say Cesaro, but the triple threat match for the King of the Ring with Joe and Ricochet, loved that as well. Like, I think just everything was booked the way it should have been booked. I love Corbin advancing. He is, I think, a shoe-in to win this thing. I don't know if who's the other guy? I can't think of his name.
Chad Gable,
if he really is more of a beneficiary of winning this than Corbin. But we have our predictions. So let's get into predictions here, because we just are tiptoeing around it. And I think it's something that is going to take up a little bit of time here. So I want to start right at the top of the card here. I'm going to start, and I'll ask you first on this one. I'll give you the floor for the Universal Championship of Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman. Obviously, they're the Raw Tag Team Champions as well, so I don't know if you want to give away your possible prediction for that as well, but as far as Universal Championship goes, is Seth retaining here?
I think Seth does keep the belt. I think his win off of Brock is way too fresh to defuse it by making him drop it. I don't think it's going to be a clean finish. I think the OC or maybe Brock Lesnar or something of that nature will get involved. I think they're going to look to continue this storyline to probably almost Survivor Series. I think they've done a really good job of making Braun Strowman relevant here. And if in that case you don't want him to lose clean to Seth as well and diffuse his momentum and his rejuvenation almost. So I don't think either superstar could afford a clean loss. Therefore, I think it will be a shady finish. I'm not quite sure exactly if I had to make a prediction, which I guess that's what we're doing. So I would probably say that the OC get involved somehow, or Brock Lesnar.
Man, you took it right out of my mouth. I really don't have a whole lot to add. It's almost like verbatim exactly what I was going to say, that this is exactly – that's the point here. Neither guy can afford a clean loss. That tells me – because they're both babyface too. When you have two babyfaces going against each other, it just begs for a heel to interfere, or heels to interfere and cause some kind of wonky disqualification or non-finish or double count out or whatever. Take your pick in terms of how this match ends. I don't care who gets disqualified. Ultimately, the point is neither guy is going to take a clean loss. And could it be Brock Lesnar? Abso-friggin-lutely, it could be Brock Lesnar. It could also be The Fiend. I mean, yes, he teased 11/19 with him changing the clock from 3/16 to 11/19, the day that The Undertaker debuted in 1990. So clearly he's sending a message that The Undertaker is eventually going to be on his list of victims. So does that happen later down the line? Is it sooner than later? But we don't know when we're going to see Undertaker again. So maybe the in-between feud is, as many people have been rumoring, the Fiend is going to interfere and take out Seth Rollins or take out Braun Strowman. There's a history there, too, with those two being in the Wyatt family. So I definitely think that there is going to be a heel, whether it's Brock, Wyatt, or the OC, or maybe all three, who the hell knows, interfering in this match to cause a non-finish and Seth Rollins retaining.
Yeah, well, I really think that the Fiend has the best thing going right now as a whole, and I would like if he maybe got involved here. I do think eventually it will lead to the Undertaker, but man, I know we're going to go a bit off track here talking about the predictions, but the Fiend is just, we didn't get a touch on it, but like, is there something better right now than Bray Wyatt? Has there been in the last few years better than Bray Wyatt? Like, this guy is just a mastermind. The Fiend is brilliant. I look forward to it, and I'm almost disappointed when I don't see him on a Monday Night Raw, but happy at the same time, because I believe you touched on it on one of your previous shows where you said it makes it feel special when he does come out. And even in Madison Square Garden, it isn't a lock that the Fiend is going to show up. So that's what makes me wanting more and constantly intrigued. And when you do see like the lights going out and whatnot, you know something big is going to happen. So honestly, like whether it be the Undertaker, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Chad Gable, No Way Jose, I don't care where the Fiend is headed. I'm just excited wherever he goes. He's just the best thing WWE has going right now.
And I love how they're not overexposing him. I know I mentioned that you listened to that show, but the fact they're not overexposing him and learning to implement self-control on their creative and not just beating something to death and into the ground when they go, oh, we got something that works. We got something that works. Let's do it and do it and do it and do it. And people will love it if we do it more and more and more. No, 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 it's not. People want to see the Fiend. It's building anticipation. Every week I'm like, oh, did the Fiend show up? Did the Fiend show up? Like, I haven't felt that about a character in years. And even when Brock Lesnar returned in 2012 and took out John Cena as his first program and was kind of in and out of WWE and has been over the last 7 years, it was cool when Brock was there, but we've seen Brock before, and no doubt he's a huge star for WWE, still is. But the Fiend it's new. People love new. He's not overexposed. He's there like once a month to take out somebody. You never know who it's going to be. And he still has the Firefly Funhouse for his other half of his personality, the evil Mr. Rogers that hosts a kids show that I absolutely love. And there are so many Easter eggs in his shows, in what the puppets say, just his Twitter feed, everything about this guy. There's so many layers. His whole character, there's so much here. And the biggest thing for me is WWE implementing self-control on exposing this character.
And I think, again, it ties into the whole Raw versus SmackDown thing, because The Fiend has primarily been on a Monday Night Raw, and it seems as though Paul Heyman has had carte blanche while SmackDown has been under the close watch of Vince McMahon. And I just think that Paul Heyman's influence here has really taken a turn for the good here. And you have to know a guy like Paul Heyman realizes that it's not every day that you strike gold like they've done with The Fiend. And to this day, I know you can't really give anything an A+, but it is as close to perfect as an angle as they've gotten here. And it's been going on now for quite a while. Like, this started in May, so we're approaching quickly 6 months now. So 5-6 months. So it's pretty impressive that they've been able to keep the intrigue for as long as they have. And now they're going to slowly tie it in to the main event picture with Seth and Braun, and eventually The Undertaker, and he brought up Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I remember when we first started talking about The Fiend back in, I believe, early June, one of my big things was I didn't want him to come back and start assaulting guys like, I don't know, like Chad Gable or Titus O'Neil or Apollo Crews. Like, he needed to come in and make an impact right off the bat. But Finn Balor was a good stepping stone, and maybe it wasn't too good for his character, but he was the perfect sacrificial lamb to get his first win on. And now he's slowly integrating himself into the main event picture, attacking legends to get heat on him. So I really have to give kudos and props to WWE on how well they've executed it for this long amount of time.
It is it's something special that's happening right now, and there are a lot of times I don't have faith in WWE creative. We've just been just educated and learned to not trust creative, but like you said, this has been a large sample size now, 6 months almost of the Fiend, well, since Bray Wyatt and then introducing the Fiend to WWE, that they have gotten it almost 100% right this entire time, which is unheard of with anybody, whether it's a new talent coming from an independent scene who are, you know, they're running vignettes and they eventually debut them, which we've seen disasters of before, or somebody coming up from NXT that just doesn't quite translate correctly. And we've seen a number of examples there. Tyler Breeze, Apollo Crews, like go down the list of guys that came up from NXT that either maybe came up too soon or just didn't have a whole lot of buzz coming into their debut or just fizzle out super quick. So right now, The Fiend is a slow burn, which I am a huge fan of, no matter what the situation is. Slow burn. I'm just really intrigued to see where and what happens at Clash of Champions. I do believe we will see The Fiend. It's a pay-per-view. We haven't seen The Fiend at that point, what, 3-4 weeks. So it's okay to put him in there. It's just a matter of who he attacks. And I think Seth Rollins could very well be that guy. My question to you then would be, if it is Seth Rollins that he attacks, they're clearly trying to position him as a heel. Do you ever see The Fiend getting true heel heat?
Well, I thought he came out this Monday Night Raw and attacked Stone Cold Steve Austin, he would have gotten real heel heat. I understand why they didn't do it, because everyone wants to, you know, no one wants to see Stone Cold get his ass whooped. But at the same time, will they ever have a better chance of getting Bray Wyatt pure heel heat? I'll argue no, and I'm pretty confident with that. Because every time he comes out, people cheer. People go nuts. People want to see him. People were cheering him and were behind him in Toronto at SummerSlam against Finn Balor. And I just feel like they really missed an opportunity here. I understand that no one wants to go see Stone Cold get laid out. But at the same time, if you're trying to build this character that people are so behind as a heel, but people are cheering him as a babyface, what better to turn people against him than attack the most beloved superstar of all time?
Yeah, that's what I was saying yesterday on my show too. Is I love Stone Cold. I will always, he is still my number one guy. He's the one that got me into wrestling and kept me in wrestling. I will never boo Stone Cold Steve Austin ever. I mean, I don't care what he does. He could try to turn heel. Even when he was heel, I still cheered him. You know, all that. So there is never and would never be a better time to attack the most popular superstar in the history of professional wrestling. I don't care what company, what promotion, what year, decade, doesn't matter. He is the most and was the most, continues to be the most popular superstar ever. And you have that opportunity sitting there in Madison Square Garden. I don't know how they didn't take it. It would have been an extremely safe bump for Stone Cold to take, because it's not even a bump. And you just kind of lay on your back and have his fingers get stuck down your throat. And it would have got him super heel heat. You don't have to go to, Stone Cold's coming back for one more match. You wouldn't have to go that way. You could eventually have Stone Cold maybe return the favor with a stunner, and the Fiend just sits up after, 10 seconds and doesn't no-sell the stunner, but is almost unaffected. I mean, there's ways you could do it that don't have to lead to a match with Stone Cold, because that's not going to happen. So I just think it was a missed opportunity if, in fact, you are trying to get true heat on the Fiend.
Well, and that's where I'm at as well, because I feel a lot of times now in the PG era or whatever era you want to call it that's not PG-14, the heels get a lot of the crowd reactions from the mature audience, because it's, you know, almost like a blast from the past, and the modern day baby faces sometimes are a bit too hokey to get behind. But in this instance, like, it's a prime opportunity to take and get all this heel heat behind Bray Wyatt. So I was kind of disappointed. At the same time, like, the fan in me, like, who wants to see Austin get it? But it's, I just feel like the long-term benefit for this would have been so astronomical. as like in turn to the short term benefit of just having Austin cheer his beers and get the pop for one night.
It would have been. I mean, the upside of this is you just never, ever know the next time you're going to have Stone Cold Steve Austin in a ring and an opportunity that presents itself as such. So I think it was a missed opportunity. Do I think it's a blow to the character of The Fiend? Absolutely not. It just, I think it would have, if the directive and the goal is to get him a true super hated heel, and clearly I don't think that that's the case, because that was an opportunity that's super low hanging fruit. I mean, you don't even have to like leave your chair to pull that fruit off the tree. It was just right there for them, and I don't know why, but clearly they are not going for true heel heat, and so that's what I'll just chalk it up to. But moving down the line here to the WWE Championship match, the mid card, I mean the semi main event, Kofi Kingston versus Randy Orton. I'm gonna toss it to you again. What do you think about this? Who wins?
Well, what I think about it, I don't care. But I just I like Randy Orton a lot, and that's the one thing keeping me invested into this. And the fact that I know that the in-ring work will be probably excellent, to say the least, between the two of them. But, you know, I'm pretty confident that Kofi's going on away with the win. One bit of skepticism I had is that he got the one-up on Randy Orton this past SmackDown on Tuesday. So I'm kind of holding out hope here that Randy Orton does come away and put an end to this merciful end to this title run by Kofi. But I don't think Randy Orton's the guy that they want leading SmackDown into the Fox era. I still have a hunch that it's eventually going to be Brock Lesnar to take this belt away from Kofi, maybe on the first night of SmackDown on Fox. So maybe that's my way too early prediction for the premiere of SmackDown on Fox. So I'm going to go with Kofi here. I think he beats him clean and ends this angle on SmackDown.
Damn, you are just like reading my mind. This is one reason only that Kofi keeps this, and that is Brock Lesnar. I mean, that is exactly why Kofi's going to retain here. I'm not going to be fooled by the misleading of whoever loses or whoever gets the one up on the show before the pay-per-view ends up losing at the pay-per-view. I've been burned by that theory more often than not as of late. So I'm not going to be fooled by that theology. I'm going to stick with Kofi Kingston as retaining the WWE Championship, and unfortunately probably in a pretty clean manner, to continue building him strong for Brock Lesnar, who's going to be likely, as you said, debuting on SmackDown Live. If they're doing the draft, Brock Lesnar I think would be a great fit on SmackDown Live and give it a huge boost for Fox, which is not that far away. What, we got like 3 weeks or so. I'm totally for that. I think it would be a great fit for Brock, a great change of pace for Brock, a great change for the feeling of SmackDown Live. I think all parties would benefit from that. And having Brock go after Kofi would be, I think, a much, much more interesting program than Kofi versus, I don't know, Randy Orton Part 3 or, you know, whoever the next one up in line is, because I don't even know who that would be. Brock Lesnar, you could tell a great story there. As much as I want to see the belt off of Kofi, and you and I are on that same train, and you know, we want that off, we want it off Kofi, who is completely, and you know what, I can't even be blamed completely to Kofi, because creative is booking him in a way that doesn't make him feel like he's the most important, because they're not making him as the main event of the show. It's all about who done it with Roman or Kevin Owens and Shane. So I think it's partly Kofi, partly creative. But I think Brock Lesnar, and there's just no other way to put it in. The announcers are going to say, this is his biggest challenge yet. I don't, you know, the fairy tale dream is going to come to an end, you know, at whatever the next pay-per-view is, Hell in a Cell or whatever it may be. So I think that's how it ends here. I think that's the end game, and I am totally in support of Brock Lesnar winning the WWE Championship from Kofi Kingston if that's where they're going.
And it makes a lot of sense, because SmackDown as a whole right now does have a lot of top-end heel talent. Like, you have Daniel Bryan, but, you know, he's the former champion, and he's invested in the storyline with Roman Reigns to an extent. And then the next biggest heel on SmackDown is pretty much Shane McMahon, after Randy Orton, that is. And that's why I feel that Brock Lesnar is perfect for this. You know, I really would like it if Randy Orton won it. I feel like he does maybe have one more world title main event run in him, but it just doesn't feel right. it feels like he's just kind of been a placeholder challenger, you know, and they do put on good matches to one another. But I just don't think that there's any way here that it isn't Brock Lesnar. It should be Brock Lesnar, and it's going to add some life to this belt that, in my opinion and yours, has lost a hell of a lot of steam since it's been put on Kofi Kingston.
Right, and I really am going to try not to go down that road again with you, just because it's a really big rabbit hole. But it just, as you mentioned, we are being broken records at times because WWE is being a broken record in their weekly programming of positioning this belt in a very forgettable segment or with a character that doesn't take anything he does seriously. And, you know, again, he could go through anything and comes out smiling and dancing and clapping and all the awful things that the New Day does at times, the eye rolling, kid loving stuff that makes me want to throw up. And so his character doesn't make a lot of sense. There's a disconnect there. So yeah, we're being a broken record because WWE continues to allow us to do so. So I'm ready for the WWE Championship to be relevant again. I'm ready to go for Kofi to go back to where he belongs, and I'm not being racist whatsoever. I don't care about the color of his skin. I care about the character and how he's been defined to me, and that is a mid-card guy occasionally touching the upper card, can put on great matches, I'm sure is a great guy, good family man, but belongs a notch below, and that's nothing wrong with that. As you said at the beginning of our show here, not everybody has to be at the top of the card. Not everybody has to be a championship holder, and that's totally fine. That's the nature of the beast. That's the nature of any sport ever.
Yeah, and, you know, I remember days when, like, look how many Hall of Famers went in as guys who never won a world championship. You know, the first guy that comes to mind is a guy like Rikishi. Everyone knows who Rikishi is. I think the best belt he ever won was the Intercontinental Championship for a brief run. And, I said on the last show, one of the best times of wrestling in my mind was when Triple H was holding the World Heavyweight title on and off for the better part of 2 or 3 years on Monday Night Raw between 2002 to 2005. But it made the belt feel relevant because Triple H always had it. You know, sports teams, you know, how long has the New England Patriots been on top? You know, it's the same concept here. You know, in hockey, the Pittsburgh Penguins have been on top for the better part of a decade. The same applies to a simulated sport. Back in those days, Triple H was the top dog, so why wouldn't he be at the top of the food chain all the time? You know, Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, these were all guys who were in and around the title picture for, you know, extended amount of times. And you didn't have guys like, I don't know, the Road Dog jumping into it just because he was a good soldier for a lot of years. And that's kind of like where I'm at with Kofi Kingston. Not only did he get the one-off and the fluke win or whatever, just the feel-good win, but it's been made and booked as this extensive run where he's been a hero and he hasn't lost a match cleanly in 6 or 7 months now. I'm just so over it. It's made me hate him. You know, in his characters, not to quote Randy Orton here, but his character is stupid. He comes out dancing and cheering and this and that. Then Randy Orton says something dumb about his kid. And then even the way he gets mad, I find, is unbelievable. And then he marches backstage and either gets destroyed by Randy Orton or attacked by the Revival. And it's just like, you know, how many times are you going to get duped by Randy Orton? Okay, I know he finally got the one-off this week, but I don't know. I've just been so done with this character going back to probably early June here, but I'm just so ready for this belt to feel meaningful again.
In the interest of not going in a 20-minute rant, I'm just going to say I completely agree. That's all I'm going to say, and I'm going to move on. I have to. It's just I have to. The Raw Women's Championship, Becky Lynch versus Sasha Banks. I'll give my quick thoughts on this, and I'll toss it to you. I'm interested in this from the perspective of, my God, I hope this goes to Sasha Banks. We kind of touch on this every single week that we've been talking, but Becky Lynch is in the same boat as Kofi Kingston. I've been ready for quite some time now for Becky Lynch to drop it, and I'm totally cool with what WWE did with her. I'm in support of it. I don't regret what they did with her. I'm happy that they went with the fan selection. Great. You listen to the fans, and you should. Wonderful. Thank you for it. But it's time to move on to somebody else, and I think Sasha Banks is a perfect fit for it. Sasha Banks came back with guns blazing. She's very, very good in a heel role. Feels totally reinvigorated. Hasn't lost a step. I'm loving Sasha Banks right now, and she could be an amazing heel champion that could go on for months and months gloating. And she has Bayley at her side to do her lifting and her dirty work if need be. I know she's a SmackDown Women's Champion too, but a good heel always has henchmen. So maybe if it's not Bayley, she could, I don't know, find a couple of girls that are lost in the women's division and pull them aside. But I'm for Sasha Banks taking off Becky Lynch here, taking off her championship, and we have a new women's champion. But so my official prediction with all that, my heart wants to say Sasha, but my brain says Becky Lynch retains.
Yeah, I really think that Sasha's going to win here because I don't think that they have had a better opponent than Sasha, and I don't know if they will get a better opponent than Sasha. And I think that they really want to go with this double heel champion on Raw and SmackDown. And I feel like they've had a good angle here as making Bayley and Sasha reunite as heels, as opposed to maybe when people thought that Bayley was going to stay babyface and go against a heel Sasha. But no, I think that I'm with you in the sense that I want Sasha to win, and I think she's the right person to win, and that I'm over Becky. But I also do think that Sasha will win, so we'll differ on opinion on this. I really think that Sasha's going to take the belt this coming Sunday.
I hope you're right. I really do. I'm so torn on this because my mind and heart are going two different ways. I'm just scared. I'm scared of this one. If Becky retains, I won't be as angry as, you know, as if Kofi retains, even though I know Brock Lesnar's looming in the very near future for Kofi Kingston, which I love that, and that Brock could finally dethrone Kofi Kingston. I think Kofi needs to drop it more than Becky. But yeah, I'm so over the Becky cockiness that's been evolving over the last 4 months. It's obnoxiousness. And we've touched on our promos and her use of language that is just not endearing at times and childish and not funny or insulting or entertaining. It just sounds awful. And has Becky been terrible top to bottom? No. She's just not a babyface character that I can get behind right now. She's obnoxious. She's cocky. The Seth Rollins program did not do any favors for anybody involved. I'm talking all four people, Lacey Evans, Baron Corbin, Seth, or Becky. It was just a disastrous pairing from all perspectives, but I'm ready for Becky to drop it. So hopefully that's what we get. I want to say you're right. I want to choose with you. I still feel that they're on the Becky Lynch train, which scares me.
Yeah, but I guess the reason why I've been more tolerant with Becky is that I truly do think that she deserved this run. I was behind this run. I just think that post-WrestleMania, her character went in a weird, bratty, almost borderline heelish direction. But I really think with how much steam they've put behind Sasha here on her return, they'd pull a lot of cold water on her if she were to lose here. And I think that they have a chance here to start a good program with Becky and Sasha for a few pay-per-views here. And I do like how they're intertwining these four together. As I've said before on the show, I think they're the four best and the four cornerstone of the women's division as a whole in WWE. So I think that in the interest of keeping this storyline going, Sasha will take the belt here. I'm pretty confident about that. And I'm really hoping that she does because I'm over Becky as champ.
Fingers crossed. Moving on to the SmackDown Women's Championship, Bayley and Charlotte Flair. What are your thoughts?
I think Bayley's going to keep the belt here. To piggyback off what I said, I think that WWE is going to go with the double heel champion here. And I don't think Clash of Champions is the time for Charlotte to win her coveted 10th title. 10th women's championship since being in WWE. I think they'll save that like for more down the line. That's a pretty like monumental victory for her. Obviously, I don't think it'll be clean. I think Sasha will get involved, as will Bayley in the other match. So I expect that Bayley will retain here. And honestly, I'm okay with it because I have been more intrigued with this new side of Bayley. It's drawn me more in here. And if she does have a one-up on Charlotte here, it could kind of solidify her as a legit champion. You know, leading up to this, winning it with a Money in the Bank cash in and beating Ember Moon, she hasn't really beat, you know, really high profile competitors to date. And I think this would be a good opportunity to solidify her here. So, yeah, I'm expecting Bayley to keep the title.
I'm with you. I don't think that Charlotte's going to win it. And that's okay, because I'm willing to continue to see this evolution of the Bayley character. Now, the only issue that I have with this Bayley character is that she's still essentially the same Bayley, other than saying that, you know, you guys didn't see this coming. I'm doing this all for you, so you guys have a hero, your kids have hero to cheer for or whatever. But so outside of those few comments, she's still coming out in the ridiculous ponytail. She still has her Bayley buddy. She still has the same music, the same mannerisms when she comes out. There's been no true turn to a darker Bayley. I would love to see a darker Bayley, not the quasi lukewarm heel turn that we're seeing right now, which is turning me off a little bit, although I'm still interested. So that's why I'm going to give this a chance. But I need to see more of an evolution of downward, 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 darker, 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 meaner, nastier Bayley that just slowly descends into madness or something like that. And I'm just not seeing that right now. It's just kind of like, I don't know why you guys hate me. I don't know. I'm trying to be a hero for your kids. I'm doing this for you. You guys didn't see this coming. Sasha's my friend. All this stuff that I'm like, that's not really a heel. You're joining Sasha, which by default makes you a heel and guilty by association. And so, like, what have you done? Okay, you attack Becky with a chair, but it's because Sasha's your friend. I don't know. I haven't seen enough of Bayley to truly determine whether this heel turn is successful or not. But I would love to see a dark Bayley. Like, take the ponytail out, put a leather jacket on, you know, take that stupid eye makeup that makes you look like a unicorn off. Like, go dark and see what we can do with this. I would love to see that. But a long way around that is that Bayley retains here, and I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I think that I'm with you. I'm willing to give it a chance. It's intrigued me enough to get me to that point, at least. I don't think that they could go on much longer here with just, like, her being oblivious and dumbfounded about why people are against her. I think this victory could segue her into, like, a darker side, much like it has for Sasha. And I just think that there's a lot to be desired with Bayley. You know, she hasn't reached her full potential since coming up from NXT, at least in my mind. And maybe she'll realize that as a heel. And I think maybe the double heel chance with Sasha is a way to do that. You know, I think if they persist with just this dumbfounded character like you were talking about, it will get stale fast, as her babyface character did. But, I mean, at least here they've set themselves up with an opportunity to succeed with Bayley.
No question. They've clearly at least hit the shutdown button on the computer, but maybe they hit the sleep mode or reset button or something like that. They've done like a soft reset on Bayley, not a hard reset. There's my analogy. And so that is what they're doing. And I'm willing to let this continue, but I think what'll get her a little more heel heat, or at least give me hope that they're evolving the character darker and meaner and nastier, is if she cheats to win. And I think that's the key here against Charlotte. She has to maybe use the ropes to her advantage, or, you know, use a foreign object behind the referee's back, something to that effect, to really get Bayley established clearly as a heel. And I think that's the key here. So Roman Reigns versus now Eric Rowan in a no disqualification match. My quick thoughts on this: I think Roman Reigns wins. This one scares me because it's so easy to pick Roman Reigns, because Eric Rowan, in the grand scheme of things, isn't even in the same universe as Roman Reigns. When you think about where Roman Reigns has been and what he's accomplished, Eric Rowan doesn't even belong in the same ring on paper. Again, we are both willing to give Eric Rowan a chance, and that's why this match scares the hell out of me to pick Roman Reigns, because it's just too easy. So I'm actually going to say Eric Rowan wins this match via Daniel Bryan, or of his own volition, or Wrestler X comes in to interfere on his behalf. So I think Eric Rowan pulls this off.
Yeah, I'm going with Eric Rowan as well, and I think Daniel Bryan's going to get involved, and it's going to be revealed that this was all a ploy and conspired between the two of Daniel Bryan and Eric Rowan. I think that's where they're going with this. I think it was all just a big hoax on Roman Reigns to play him for a fool, that they were in cahoots the entire time. Like you mentioned earlier in the show, it can't, the payoff can't be just Eric Rowan. I think it is most definitely Daniel Bryan, and I think that this is just going to segue to potentially a Hell in a Cell match with Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns. But I think I'm almost 100% confident that that's where they're going with this, and Eric Rowan will win this match.
Right, and I think that's a good logic. And we probably, when Bryan comes out, we'll be reminded by the announcers of, well, Eric Rowan, he, you know, said he can't be controlled, and he attacked Daniel Bryan. So in the fans' minds, at least the ones that are, you know, the casual fan are probably thinking, ah, well, he's clearly going to get his revenge on Eric Rowan. He'd never attack Reigns after what Eric Rowan did to him a few weeks ago. And boom, we get the turn on Roman Reigns. Both are standing there. We have the sadistic smile in the eyes of Daniel Bryan, which I absolutely love. I love his descent into madness, too. He's been brilliant with his body language and his promos as of late, too. I'm loving him. So, yes. That's, I think, what happens. Bryan comes out. We all believe he's going to get his revenge on Rome because it's no DQ. And they all both turn on Reigns, and Reigns takes the fall. So I'm looking forward to this because I'm, as you just said, this whole hoax on Roman Reigns has to be the payoff. WWE cannot believe that Eric Rowan is a payoff for all of the constant, incessant reminders and video packages on the attacks on Roman Reigns that were over and over and over and over. Can't be Eric Rowan. It just can't be. It just can't be. So it has to be Bryan.
Yeah, and, you know, if this is just a means to an end that is Daniel Bryan versus Roman Reigns, I'm all here for it because it would have been a nice swerve and a nice segue to it. But I can't see it being the payoff being Eric Rowan. So I really think that Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan will end up going one-on-one here. And I don't think that they've really had an extended feud, you know, because Daniel Bryan did wrestle for, what was it, almost 3 years at one point? Or 2 years, I forget how long it actually was. And then when he did come back, he was on SmackDown and Roman Reigns was on Raw. And at the time, there was a complete brand split. So it's also a fresh matchup. So I think they could really stretch this feud for a long time, maybe all the way until Survivor Series. So if that is the case and they do, in fact, go in the way that I think that they're going, I'm here all day for it.
Yeah, I'm willing to let this play out. I'm not totally crapping all over this match yet, in this program yet. Now, if Roman Reigns ends up defeating Eric Rowan soundly, and the announcers say it's retribution for the big dog, and then, you know, that's it, I would say this was a failure of a storyline. Because not only is it not exciting that it's Eric Rowan who's the payoff after months, but you also now are just having Roman Reigns pull out the golden shovel and put Eric Rowan back into oblivion of nowhere, and having Roman Reigns just go through another guy and get his retribution and move on. So that absolutely, if it is that of the outcome where there's no Bryan and it's just a straightforward beatdown from Reigns, then I would classify this as a complete failure.
Oh my god, if it's that, and I think Roman Reigns is going to get booed out of the building, that would be the laziest booking they could have gone with. Because then where do you even go with Daniel Bryan after that? You know, last time we saw it, he got face slammed or face choke slammed, whatever they call that move. But it would make no sense for any character. Roman Reigns would just be left beating Eric Rowan. Rowan, like you said, would be buried. And then Daniel Bryan would have no concrete direction, would have a split from Eric Rowan. So I really hope that's not the case. I don't believe that's the case, but they really have to steer clear from that payoff.
The scary thing is that I would not put it out of the realm of impossibility with WWE Creative. I know they've made improvements as of late, but I still don't have 100% confidence that that is not a possible outcome. I wouldn't say it's likely. I would say it's towards the bottom of likely, but I still would not put it out of I would not say it's impossible. Let me just put it that way, which is scary, but I think you and I are on the same page that Rowan gets the win via the help of Daniel Bryan, all to be revealed as a hoax and a conspiracy against Reigns. So moving on the line here with the Intercontinental Championship, Shinsuke Nakamura versus The Miz. What happens here?
I think Nakamura retains. I think they're really investing a lot of time to building Nakamura's credibility and character, which I'm really excited for. Although they weren't paired together this week, I've said before that I love the pairing of he and Sami Zayn. I think The Miz is a good opponent for him to get a substantial win over. Obviously, The Miz is an 8-time Intercontinental Champion and spent the better part of 2-3 years making that title relevant and preaching about how historic and how good the lineage was on it. So I think that Nakamura retains here. Also, the fact that The Miz is technically a Raw superstar, I think that has something to do with it. But no, I'm pretty confident here that Nakamura retains and he starts a pretty good run here as Intercontinental Champion.
Right, and The Miz has been pretty quiet as of late, to be honest with you. He has not been the focus of a whole lot of TV time. You know, he just kind of has, you know, gone through the cycle of just that's the way the business is, right? Like, I mean, not everyone can be the focal point at all times, and I think The Miz is just a result of the system, and The Miz is there as an opponent for Shinsuke Nakamura, a formidable, credible opponent. The Miz created the took the Intercontinental Championship to new levels. He did exactly what he said he did when he was Intercontinental Champion and made the championship super relevant. And Shinsuke Nakamura, I think, has an opportunity to do the same. The problem is that Shinsuke Nakamura has not gotten a whole lot of TV time either. And the pairing with Sami Zayn needs to be brought back here. And I think that maybe if Shinsuke beats The Miz, I don't know if it's clean, although I hope it is, to establish Shinsuke as credible. There could easily be also some shenanigans from Mr. Sami Zayn.
Yeah, and I just think Sami Zayn has really turned this character around. And he's given an element to Nakamura's character that was lacking. And that's what I've really liked, because the whole thing with Nakamura is that he couldn't build a character on his own. And that's why I think that he got straddled with a Rusev a bit. And on a side note, where the hell is Rusev? But to get back on track here, you know, I think that if they keep this pairing together, Nakamura could have a really meaningful run here. And like you said, The Miz has been doing a whole lot of nothing as of late, but he still is a formidable opponent and a guy that when you beat, it will hold some value over. So I think it's just a perfect win here for Nakamura to beat The Miz. And you know what? The Miz doesn't need this win right now. I know he's been kind of doing a whole lot of nothing, like I just said, but he can afford to go through a little dip here after the years that he's put in leading up to this.
Oh yeah, The Miz isn't going to lose anything by, even if he loses clean to Shinsuke. The Miz is he's kind of Teflon at this point. I mean, if Shinsuke beats him clean, it's not going to hurt him. It's not going to hurt The Miz. It'll just elevate Shinsuke, and I think you're just, you know, off to the races with Shinsuke. I'm fine with The Miz losing clean. I have no issue with it because Shinsuke is the one that needs the help, not The Miz right now. On the flip side, with the United States Championship on the Raw side, AJ Styles versus Cedric Alexander. Does Styles retain here, or is it possible Alexander gets a victory?
I think Styles retains here. I think they've done a masterful job with AJ Styles as United States Champion. I think he's made that belt. He's put at the forefront on Monday Night Raw. As I said earlier on in our show, that I like how they've interconnected all the titles and all the storylines on Monday Night Raw. And I think AJ Styles is a big part of that. I don't see the benefit from switching to Cedric Alexander to this point. I like that they're utilizing Cedric Alexander more. I think that the match will be somewhat of a Ricochet AJ Styles-esque match, where their styles, again, no pun intended, will complement each other well in the ring. But I really just don't see a scenario here where Cedric Alexander takes the belt from AJ, and nor do I think he should. I really think that Styles has been the best heel on Monday Night Raw as of late, and he's made that belt super relevant and made me care about it. And it's main evented Raw several times since he's been put into the U.S. title picture. So I just don't see any kind of benefit from removing the title off of him at this point.
I don't either. This is as close to a lock on the card as you can get. I just don't see any need or want to change it to give it to Cedric. It just as good of a performer as Cedric is, he just he's not in AJ Styles' league. I mean, let's face it. Athletically, of course, but in terms of how they've defined his character and everything else that goes along with AJ, Cedric is nowhere near AJ. And so I just don't see any scenario. I just don't see any reasoning for having the belt changed to Cedric. As you said, the United States Championship feels like it means more than it ever has. Maybe all the way back to the days of John Cena doing the United States Open Challenge, which was also super entertaining. I love that as well. So it means a lot right now. Having him as champion with his buddies Gallows and Anderson is also makes their clan, their stable, their original clan, their original clique, whatever OC you want to label it as, feel relevant, feel important. They are keeping their leader as champion. That's what henchmen do, and that's what they are. Gallows and Anderson on their own right can be tag team champions and have been tag team champions, but face it, they are the henchmen for AJ Styles, who's the leader. And that's fine. Love it. That's a good way to build a heel champion. So long story short, AJ Styles retains in what I do believe could be, if given enough time, I'd say 12 to 15 minutes, enough time, could be in maybe one of the top two matches of the night.
Yeah, and I like what you said there about keeping AJ Styles as champion, as the leader of a stable, because the stable always feels more important when there's a title involved, specifically on the leader of the stable. And as we saw, like, Gallows and Anderson were able to drop the tag team titles, and the OC was still able to stay relevant. I love what they're doing with the OC right now, and I want them to take this as long as they possibly can. And I think the best way to do that is keeping AJ Styles in the title picture of some sort, even if it's the U.S. title. I'm a big proponent of making titles feel like they mean something. AJ Styles does that. And in turn, you know, he feels like he's not just wasting away, because as much as I can get behind personal feuds and sometimes they do have their benefit, nothing is more important than holding a championship. And that's what AJ Styles should be doing. He's one of the best performers in WWE. He's one of the best wrestlers in WWE. So even though he's not in the thick of a world championship, I still like that he's holding a belt, and I hope they keep it that way.
And I think they will. It's just not time. It's just not time. It's not the right opponent. So Cedric, it'll be a good match. It'll be entertaining. I'm sure there'll be some near falls. And the wrestler, the announcers will have to say he takes AJ to the limit. I'm sure we'll be told that he took AJ to the limit, because that's what everyone does to everybody. But I expect it to be a very good match, and a lot of maybe even a couple of this is awesome chance. So That's something to look. I'm looking forward to more of the quality of the match than the outcome, which is more or less predictable. So the Raw Tag Team Championship was Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman versus Ziggler and Robert Roode. Not Bobby Roode anymore. Again, it's Robert Roode. I see it in front of me. My quick thoughts on this is that Dolph and Roode gain or take these Raw Tag Team Championships. They, while they came from nothing, there have been hints of them getting a bigger push. And what I mean by that is they align themselves with the OC. At least you thought in a temporary capacity on Monday Night Raw. I believe, and I had a conversation with my co-host yesterday, that this could be the beginning of maybe a larger stable. I know that sounds a little bit crazy. We haven't seen a large stable since, what, the Nexus. But maybe Ziggler and Roode join the OC and AJ. I mean, who knows? But either way, I think Ziggler and Roode take the championships here, and just because of the fact that you can't have Rollins and Strowman doing double duty, or especially Rollins doing double duty on every pay-per-view, this was nothing more than just to get them to a Universal Championship match and also make the Raw Tag Team Championships feel a little bit more important and give them a little more shine than they had in the last couple of months. So it's no shame in having them drop their belts in the first title defense. I'm totally fine with it. And Ziggler and Roode, both good workers and could make something of the belts themselves.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I've liked the alliance between Braun and Seth, but you can only bring it so far. Eventually, there has to be a bit of a disintegration between them. And like you said, they can't do double duty forever. I like Roode and Ziggler, and I'm happy that they're making them relevant in some capacity. I'm all for it if they want to make a big stable with the OC. But in any way, shape, or form, guys like Robert Roode and Dolph Ziggler should not be wasting away on the card. They're too good in the ring. They're too. I love Dolph Ziggler as a character, so I think this is a good way to keep them relevant. I hope that once the belts do get to them, they maybe stop this constant rotating cast of tag team champions to maybe make it feel a bit more, you know, important than just like dropping the tag team titles every month or so. But besides that, yeah, I think that it would be a good move to go in a direction with Rude and Ziggler and maybe take the tag team belts off on a kind of its own path a bit, not to get overshadowed by the Universal title and US title. And I've said that I like when the storylines interchange a bit, but you don't have to put all your eggs in one basket all the time.
Right, exactly. I think you're right on that one. It just, and you know, when you have Braun Strowman and Seth Rollins facing each other later that night, it just kind of makes sense that they're going to, and this match could very well open the show. I could see this match opening the show and then Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman closing the show. I think that's what they do whenever they have a situation like this, just so that there is the largest amount of time between the performances so that you don't get burned out of seeing them. I'm fine with if that's the case. Ziggler and Rude end up you know, getting the belts here, and it creates tension for Rollins and Strowman for their Universal Championship match at the end of the night. So I think that's just I'm fine with it. I'm totally cool with it. Some quick thoughts here. I know we're running against time, but SmackDown Tag Team Championship, New Day versus The Revival. What are your thoughts on this? Do you care?
It's hard. It really is hard. I like the New Day and I like the Revival. I think the New Day wins and to be honest, the only reason why I'm picking them is because the Revival are the members of Raw. So I don't think, even though the brand split is kind of not there right now, I still don't think that they'll put a SmackDown title on Raw superstars. But there's just something about this match that lacks for me. And I think it has been because that they haven't been around. You know, Xavier hasn't been around in almost a month. Big E has been at least 2 weeks. You know, the Revival were nowhere to be found this past week. So how are we supposed to care? I wouldn't be surprised if this is a pre-show match. And I feel bad because you know that it's going to be a good in-ring match. And I would like to invest more of my energy into it here. But I just don't see a way where the Revival win, because for the title to change, there has to be some kind of backstory. Not all the time, as we saw with Ryder and Hawkins at WrestleMania, but more times than not, you have to put some significant investment into a storyline to justify the belts changing hands. And I really don't think that it's been there for this feud.
No, this feud has been... they just, as you said, they've done nothing with it for 2 to 3 weeks. Nothing. So how am I supposed to get invested when WWE's not invested? I mean, it wasn't even mentioned. It wasn't even mentioned that this was a match on SmackDown Live, at least to my knowledge. I'm only seeing it because I'm looking at the card right now on paper. I don't care because they don't care. And I just say that the New Day probably get their retribution. They retain soundly and move on with our lives. And this could easily, as you said, be a pre-show match. And it probably should be. It's deserving of a pre-show match because it's gotten pre-show attention. So the SmackDown Women's Tag Team Championship, Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross versus Fire and Desire. Who wins this one?
You know, I'm going to say Nikki and Alexa, and I'm just going to go on a quick rant here. I think that creating these titles were a mistake because I felt like after the initial hype of them being created, they would just fall into an obscurity, much like they have, just based on the lack of women power that they have on the roster to support a tag team division. And I think that they've done their best that they can building this storyline and building this feud. I like Fire and Desire. They're good heel opponents, but again, like, there's just not enough there for me to get invested into it. And I don't think that Fire and Desire have done enough to warrant a title swap to them. I think that the reason why they put the belts onto Alexa and Nikki is because Alexa has enough clout behind her and enough of, like, how would I put it? Anyway, a big enough reputation there. That's what I was trying to say, behind her to make those belts feel relevant on her own. And, you know, and the Nikki Cross angle also kind of helps it. But at this point, I really don't see how they put the belts on Fire and Desire.
Yeah, I don't think they do. I wouldn't, again, this is not a lock for me, but I don't think Fire and Desire have been established enough to be holding those championships. At the same time, there's not a whole lot of clout that is is with those women's tag team belts, because they've been forgotten half the time. They were with the Iconics. They won them, who I think could have been amazing tag team champions, but they weren't ever like on TV after, you know, they had the belts and then they were just gone for 3 weeks, or they were there in passing, and they're the women's tag team champions. Like, they were all but forgotten, and clearly this is not a focus of WWE. This was, I don't know if it was just done out of fan service to say, hey, we have women's tag team belts just like you wanted, but we're not going to do anything with them. And you know, that's kind of what it seems like it is. And do they have enough tag teams on the roster to even have a tag team championship? Probably not. I mean, how many tag team women's tag teams could you name? Like, beyond maybe like 3 or 4. It's crazy. So it's just, this is going to also be, as you said, a rotating cast of who wants the belt this month. I mean, that's what it's going to be. But Nikki and Alexa, I think, are the most credible, legitimate tag team that WWE has. Alexa is the star of this entire foursome. And even Alexa at this time is not making it feel super important. And having Mandy Rose come out this past week on SmackDown Live and just talk about how Nikki Cross is ugly and she's beautiful, man, does it get any more, like, just sophomoric than that? Really, I mean, it did absolutely nothing for me.
Well, yeah, it's just lazy writing, in my opinion. Like, how many times have we seen this? It reminds me of the whole angle between Nia Jax and Alexa Bliss at WrestleMania 34. But I think that was just a quick way for them to get people to care about this match, because, again, when I turned on SmackDown earlier tonight, I was just like, oh, yeah, this is a match coming up at Night of Champions, or Clash of Champions. Sorry, I keep making that mistake. But I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a good match, and I do like all the characters individually. I like the tag teams. But again, similar to the SmackDown tag team titles, there's just not enough, you know, reputation behind this match and story building behind this match and storytelling and any way you want to put it that leads me to believe that there will be a title change here. And I think that they're just holding on to Alexa Bliss keeping these titles afloat on the main roster for now.
Yep, I think you've said it all. I mean, I really have nothing more to add to this match. This could also be a kickoff match. I mean, honestly, this would not surprise me. Maybe both of these matches, the SmackDown Tag Team Championships, the men and the women's tag team belts, are also on the pre-show. I mean, really. A sure pre-show, and this is the final match. The Cruiserweight Championship is Drew Gulak, who's the champion, versus Humberto Carrillo and Lince Dorado. I'll be totally honest. I don't have any investment in this at all, and I don't even know the storyline beyond Drew Gulak is the champion. So I think Drew Gulak retains because reasons. What about you?
I'm with you. I really rarely watch 205 Live, and I don't know. I really never got invested into the revamped Cruiserweight division, even when they had it on Monday Night Raw for what felt like a split second. But there's not enough star power in that division for them to switch the titles at this time. I think Gulak keeps it. It seems like a trend in the Cruiserweights right now that, you know, that the champions have lengthy title reigns. So I'm with you that I think Drew Gulak retains with this one.
Yep. I really have nothing else to add. So. Anthony, listen, it's been a blast. I know we're out of time, but don't forget that you can follow Anthony on Twitter at
ADeMarco25.
And there you have it. And guys, we'll be back tomorrow. I don't know. I normally have Anthony on tomorrow, but I have a lot of other things going on, so I'm going to try to do a show maybe later this week. But Anthony, it's been a blast. I'm sure that when 3 weeks go by, will we actually be close to that Fox debut? Because that Fox debut is October 8th, I believe, right?
Yeah,
I think it's October 8th.
Yeah, October 8th. So in 3 weeks, it will be right before that. So we'll have a lot to be talking about when we round out in 3 weeks from now.
Oh, man, it's going to get nuts. So I looking forward to it. And I want to thank you for being on the show. Looking forward to Clash of Champions. And definitely, guys, go follow Anthony. He's always a fun follow on Twitter, that's for sure. So thanks so much for joining me, Anthony, and we'll be in touch.
Yeah, Matt. Talk soon.
All right. Take care.